Hey, it's Stephanie here. This episode comes with a content warning. This is simply to empower you, the audience, with the knowledge you need to make healthy decisions about how and if you should consume this podcast content. In this episode, we discuss the parent-child relationship. There may be mentions of abuse, neglect, rejection, and abandonment, as well as death. I am not a doctor or a therapist, nor are the guests on this show. The stories, ideas, and thoughts expressed here are those of the guests alone. A list of resources are available in the podcast description, where I have tried to list as many hotlines, info pages, and references as I could find. Please take care of yourself, and if you need to, don't be afraid to reach out and ask for help. Someone will reach back. Hey there. Unfortunately, on this episode, there was a few technical issues for one of the guests. I do ask that you just bear with us through the parts that I left in that might be a little choppy. It's worth the laugh.
I'm so glad you're here.
Hello and welcome to Town Rituals Red Tent Gathering. This episode is hard for me. I have been estranged from my mother for a number of years now. There are definitely times when I miss her. Mostly, though, there was a lot of compassion and empathy for her as the woman she is now, the woman that raised me, and the young woman she was when she became a mother. This episode is about mothers and our relationship with the women who gave us life. It is not a shame and blame discussion. We're here to reflect on our upbringings, our mothers' lives, the joy and pain we carry as their children, and the compassion we have for them as individuals, and to acknowledge how they have shaped us as women in our friendships and as mothers and caregivers. Today, I have with me Mary, Sophia, Libby, and Anna. I'm so glad you're here.
I'm so glad you're here.
Preparation for this recording, I know why I'm estranged from my mother. So I just decided, like, what are all the other reasons that people become estranged from their parents? So I Googled, why do kids estrange themselves from their parents? The causes of estrangement can include abuse, betrayal, bullying, unaddressed mental health, not being supportive, destructive behavior, substance abuse. Oftentimes, parents do not square with their child's sexual orientation, choice of spouse, gender identity, religion, and or political views. So I think the first half of that absolutely applies to my situation. I think of everyone in the room, I may be the only person who's estranged from their parent, which maybe I'll talk about a little bit later. But Sophia, wanted to bring you in and just maybe hear about the relationship you had with your mother growing up and where the two of you are now.
Yeah, so thank you so much, by the way, for doing a podcast on motherhood. I think that this is such an important topic that isn't discussed as much as it should be nowadays. I think that this is a topic that a lot of people can learn and grow together with, right? So thank you so much for choosing to do this topic today. I myself started off as feeling as though my mom didn't really care about me. I felt like our relationship was superficial while I was growing up. For the longest time, I had felt that way. And only recently did that change or begin to change. And I can see the trajectory of it headed better and better, which is nice. And I believe that your interaction, that like interaction with your children throughout every stage is so important. And I remember playing in the basement alone all the time during the day when my mom was asleep upstairs. She was asleep because she was struggling, you know, and doing her best to keep up with what life was throwing at her. I was never mad at her for it. You know, it led me to think that she would just rather spend time alone than be with me. So for the longest time, that's, I think, might have been what influenced my feelings of her, you know, being a bit of like a superficial mother, but more and more I started to realize that motherhood is not something that can be replicated. It's not something that can be, faked. And so my perception changed over time. But I understand a lot more now, having experienced anxiety and depression myself, and realize now that that's, I recognize that as being what it was, where at the time I didn't know that, right? As a child, you don't really understand when you see your mom sleeping all the time, when all you want to do is play with her and spend time with her, and, and she was just trying to regulate her energy levels and recuperate from what life was.
Hi, Sophia, are you still there? Hello? Can anyone hear me?
Yes,
I can hear you.
Oh, okay. I feel like everything just cut out for me for a second.
Yeah, yeah. Sophia cut out mid-sentence.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Sophia, are you there? Oh, I feel like this happened. I feel like this happened last time Sophia was on a podcast.
Oh, no.
That's okay. We'll give her a minute to come back. I was just making some notes while she was talking. And I definitely want to acknowledge that. I think for a lot of our mothers, like, how many of them had undiagnosed postpartum depression?
Yeah.
I know I suffered for a good year before I really accepted I wasn't okay. And if I still had support.
If my mom
Yeah, sorry, go ahead, Lily.
If my mom didn't have postpartum depression, that would shock me, because it's just, she's never been diagnosed, but yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, and I feel like I remember when I was, summer of between first and second year of college, and I had a job at a fast food place, and I got really close to my manager, and I was going through some new awareness of like some trauma I had experienced as a child. She and I were talking one day, and she said, Stephanie, it's good that you are acknowledging these things now that are happening in your life. She said, because when you become a mother, she said, all of your traumas come roaring back at you in a way that you couldn't have conceived, because you're all of a sudden experiencing that trauma, but now from the perspective of being a caregiver, nurturer, and someone responsible for someone.
Oh, right.
And I did experience some of that when I became a mother, which was really interesting. Okay, I'm just going to pop into my email. I'm going to have to do so much editing. Oh my God. All right. I hope she's okay. So while we're waiting for Sophia to come back, maybe what I'll do, Anna, if you want to come in and maybe talk a little bit about some of your experiences with your mother, and how maybe in reflection on kind of what you've experienced in life as an adult now, and how maybe you see her differently.
Mm-hmm. First, thank you for opening this space. I actually didn't know how much I needed a space like this until you opened the door. So thank you very much. I'm going to start saying that my mother is a woman, and she was not born a mother. And for me, it took years to understand that. It's not like she popped up in this world being a mother. She had to learn how to do it, and to learn while she was doing it. So for me, that changed everything. Now that I understand it like that, I see her in a very different light. Maybe that's why I feel that I'm so much closer to her right now. And she also had postpartum depression when she had me. I'm absolutely sure about that. It was a very difficult delivery and very difficult recovery. So I guess that all of that adds up to not very easy relationship. For me, what I would like to share is that when I was, before I was a teenager, so I was a pre-adolescent, my mom was going through a very difficult situation with my family in general, my sister, my dad, and she was taking care of everything. And she saw that I could somehow manage myself, and she pretty much left me to raise myself up. Like, she was there, but she was taking care of everything else, not me. Because she knew that she could trust me to do my thing, do good in school, follow the norms, and to try something, to try to do something for myself. But she left me for a long, long time like that. And the relationship grew up, me being like responsible for keeping that contact with my mom. So we will talk if I will call, we will share if I will search, we will do if I suggest it. And she was just assuming that I was perfectly fine, that everything was fine. And she didn't even ask until there was a time in my life when things were not going right. And I told her, you don't even ask. And she realized that, yeah. But it took me to understand first that, no, that the love and motherhood and having a kid is also like constructing a building, a bridge. And when I understood that, no, she was missing from my life because she was not putting the effort to be there, I had to reach out and tell her, like, no, this is not going to work if we only expect me to do all the job. It took her a while to understand that. And only when I caught and was a stranger from her for a while, she understood, like, okay, so no, I'm missing my daughter because she's my daughter. She needs a mom. And it's not the same as it was before, but it's much better for me now that I know that she's also doing, pulling her weight. No.
That's good. Yeah, I wonder. So I'm going to, so Sophia is back with us. Can you hear us, Sophia?
Sorry.
It's okay. It happens. So one of the things we started discussing after you dropped off, and Anna, also, I'm not sure if you had heard her say that she's sure that her mother had postpartum depression. But while we were waiting for you to come back on, I was commenting that how many of our mothers had undiagnosed PTSD. Mm-hmm. I mean, we didn't treat women who had mental health issues mm-hmm. well in general, mm-hmm. but for single mothers of the 80s and 90s who had postpartum depression, like, good luck to you.
Yeah. You
raised some really tough kids, you know?
Yeah, it's true. That's very true. So sorry about that earlier.
That's okay.
I'm not sure if you guys, I feel bad jumping in. Should I?
No. Yeah, no, please continue with what kind of, so I think one of the last, I was making notes, you had said motherhood can't be faked.
Yeah.
And I had said, and I wrote a comment that said, yet society makes it look so beautiful and easy. Yeah. You know, like we're sold this mm-hmm. and I really think that baby boomers in particular were sold this idea that they could be feminists and they could have careers and they could have a whole family unit and white picket fences yeah. But society didn't come with them on yeah. that journey, not really. And I think we're still mm-hmm. telling women they can have those things but not supporting them properly
yeah
in that.
Yeah.
So go ahead. Sorry. Yeah,
I think that's where a lot of, you know, issues might lie, right? Is in the idea that, you know, when women started working, they took on a lot of responsibility. And, you know, this is actually something I was going to touch on, is that, you know, my mom, I remember, you know, playing in the basement alone during the day while my mom was asleep upstairs. And I used to think to myself, you know, is it because she doesn't love me? Is it because she'd rather, you know, be having alone time than spend time with me? And I was really young, right? So as a child, seeing your mother sleeping when, you know, during the daytime, you don't understand that it's depression, you know, and she was just trying to recuperate from the day and from what life was throwing at her, and, you know, the struggles of upholding a full-time job and trying to be a good mother. And, you know, motherhood, like, it can't be faked, you know, like it's thing that you're either there or you're not. And I didn't realize that, you know, she was there. She was just there in a different way, in the best way she could have been at the time. You know, but as a child, I didn't realize that I had started off feeling as though my mom didn't care about me, and that, you know, my relationship with her was superficial. And I believe that, you know, your interaction with your children through every stage of life is super important, but it's really interesting to see how it changes as life goes on. And, you know, I was never mad at her for the kind of lack of relationship that we had growing up. I don't want to say she was completely absent, because she wasn't. But of course, she had her struggles that she was trying to, you know, cope with. And I understand that now a lot more, having experienced anxiety and depression myself in adulthood, right? It's something that once you experience, you can look back and recall, you know, what you were experiencing. You know, she was just trying to regulate her energy levels and recuperate. And I'm not mad at her for that. I feel bad that I couldn't help in a way, you know.
Well, but it also wasn't your responsibility, really, because it's children. Yeah. I'm going to say everyone in this discussion took on parental adult responsibility way before they should have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She was 21. So she was pretty young. Right. Yeah. But now I've been living on my own now for 5 years, and our relationship has grown so much stronger. Living with my mom back then was difficult for me. I don't think she's the easiest person to live with for numerous reasons. But over the past few years, I grew up a lot and learned a lot about life and motherhood. Despite not being a mother, I'm at the stage in my life where I idealized what kind of mother I want to be to my child when I have one. And I've spent a lot of time thinking about mine and my mom's relationship and how it's changed throughout my life. Living apart from her gave me the space that I needed to collect my thoughts. And it also allowed us to enjoy each other's company while not feeling like smothered by each other.
Yes. Yes. You know,
I think that's super important. It taught me boundaries. You know, and when she had a bad day, whenever we lived together and she had a bad day, I was the one who felt it, right? I was the one who kind of got the raw end of the stick. And that was really difficult for me to learn how to cope with. And I think it helped me to develop as an individual and taught me resilience, which is good. But of course, you know, you don't want that kind of strain in your relationships with people, right? But some days I didn't do a good job at coping with with her bad days either. But, you know, it's not the easiest. And I'm sure many people can attest to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
With that treatment, you know, that comes with that person having a bad day is not easy, right? But I used to take it as a personal attack, which often escalated things and made things worse, you know. So that's definitely, like, I contributed as well to an unhealthy dialogue at times. But, you know,
man.
Yeah, but moving out, you know, somehow it allowed me to sit back easier and evaluate the situation from the outside a bit better. And maybe that's because we argued over the phone more rather than in person. And so we were able to just, like, eject from the situation faster than if we were at home together, and it allowed more time between conversations, maybe. So it really did help. And our relationship grew quiet. Now I really enjoy my morning calls with my mom, and she went on vacation last week, and I was like, oh my God, I can't call her. Like, I was having a hard time, you know, which I'm glad that it's, you know, gotten.
That's very sweet, though, that the two of you are at that point now where you talk every morning as your day starts.
Yeah.
I wanted to just loop back. I'm going to bring Libby in a second, but I just wanted to loop back to when we were talking about how baby boomer women were told they could have careers and families and all those things. And you said, oh yeah. And they took on all these they had all these responsibilities. And I thought, yeah, but they didn't get rid of any of their other responsibilities.
Exactly.
They still, you know, and so it was just like, here's your life. And then here's a second life on top of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really hard. I can only imagine, you know, I'm not a mom yet, but I really want to be. And I'm, you know, there are things that I will do differently with, you know, when I raise my children. But I learned from my mom's mistakes. And, you know, you don't have to see somebody getting, like, you don't have to put your hand on the fire after having seen someone get burned to know that you're going to get hurt doing it, right? Like, I've learned a lot seeing her make mistakes.
Yeah.
So now, like, I'm at the stage where I really want to start having kids, and I'm, you know, I'm looking forward to being given that opportunity, you know, but it's going to be difficult, and I can imagine, you know, it's very sacrificial. It is, right? Like, you sacrifice a lot of yourself for your children, I would imagine, right?
It's not easy. Yeah. We'll talk with Mary a little bit about in a little bit about her experience as someone's daughter and as someone's mother. But I want to squeeze Libby in here. Libby and I were connecting a few days ago about what she was going to talk about. So Libby, what's the status of your relationship with your mom?
Well, it's actually pretty great these days. I literally was talking to her about a couple of hours ago. She rang out of stuff and we had one of our chitty chats, not one of our marathons, but, you know, a little bit of reminiscence and stuff. I think on the whole, I have a happy story here in that, well, I wasn't always happy, but I was raised in an abusive household, and as a consequence of that, my dad, and he held her in contempt, and that was infectious because that's how it goes. Have that kind of situation, so I pretty much held her in contempt too. I mimicked my dad's attitude all through my childhood and my teens. I poured scorn on her in various ways, and so did my older brother. And essentially, we were rejecting her while sucking up to the abuser, which is exactly how that dynamic goes. So for her, it really sucked. I should imagine that was some very difficult and very bitter years. But the most of my adulthood has found us getting closer and closer together, and basically into, like, I think a big part of my relationship with my feminine side or my femininity or whatever is, I think that's part of my journey in this life, is coming to terms with it or getting to peace with it or something, if you believe in that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. That's really beautiful. Oh, I can't wait to send you a handbag.
Okay.
Matching high heel.
I don't know about it. Maybe we'll just start out with a handbag.
Did you know what? Like, every now and again, I'll join or whatever. And knitting is effing hard.
Mm-hmm. Oh God!
Yeah. Always made so she would make the. Outfits for my dolls, and she'd like make these like beautiful little kind of twin set pieces, which of course I hated because they were handmade and they were made by her and therefore they were lame as hell. But I kind of like, I think you made it look so easy. I can't get through a freaking line. Turns out she had like a whole lot of superpowers. I just had no respect for them, but they were there the whole time.
That's awesome. Well, I'm going to pull Marion, who has been listening and giggling at our jokes, and is also someone I've known for a really long time, and has, I think for me, I have a lot of respect for how, Mary, you have approached your relationship with your mother with a lot of grace and compassion that I hope to be able to have for my mom one day. Yeah. So speaking of raising yourself, do you want to talk a little bit about...
Yeah, it's interesting. I keep hearing things that resonate and echo for me and in the other women's stories. And certainly when I see close families or people talk about loving or being loved by their parents, you know, I always think, oh, that's so nice. That's so lovely. And it's kind of like, you know, somebody who's got a boat, you think, oh, that's so nice. That's so lovely. But it's really a different planet, and something that I will never get a chance to experience. So I'm happy that it's in the world, and I get the impression that perhaps it is actually normal, but none of us are normal here, so we're in good company. my mom, a couple of minutes before she died, told me that she loved me, and I could be wrong, but I can't remember her ever having said those words before. And like a good Canadian, I was very polite and I said I loved you back, because she was going to die in a few minutes and it seemed like the right thing to say. My sister was unable to lie. She just couldn't do it. But I thought it was the kind thing to do. But really, our parents never liked us at all. My dad had some pretty profound unaddressed trauma. And I think that my mom did as well, although she thought, she was very much a stoic. She thought it was very shameful to have emotions and looked down on anybody who did. And she certainly didn't ever want to talk about them or to talk about any challenges in her life, because I think that those felt like weaknesses to her. When I was going through her home after she died, I was struck by all of the pictures of my grandmother. She was on the prairies and she died when I was a teenager, so I didn't have much of a relationship with my grandmother and don't really remember the handful of times that we visited her out there when I was young. But I was really struck by finding all these photos of her where she never once smiled. And the little things that my mom would occasionally let slip about her childhood, and all of these photos of this woman who never smiled, it gave me a sense a bit of who she was and where she came from. But they were very much a product of their times. Divorce wasn't really a thing yet. We were right on the cusp of that. And certainly nobody got any assistance with mental health issues. So they were really just left alone to cope with these unmanageable things. Their hatred for each other was incandescent. It was a very vile environment. And in fact, my mom made it her life's work to educate everyone she met in how to hate my father. And certainly the main value that my sister and I had for her was as weapons that she could use against my father. So at a very young age, I took a look around and realized that these people were really struggling and that they were doing a really shitty job of raising us. And I wasn't interested in that. So, you know, I was a child. I was living in the same house and eating at the same table, but I very much enfranchised myself and went about my own business and followed my own counsel and raised myself. And it's interesting that when we're small, we have such limited resources and capacity, and our understanding of the world is very narrow. And the strategies that we come up with to save our own lives when we're little are often huge handicaps when we're older.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so this, yeah, this strategy of stepping back and creating distance and being alone very much saved my life in a very real way when I was a child, but it has kind of ossified and it has kind of become a bit of a handicap as an adult. And that's something that I've, you know, been working on for a very long time. And it took a long time to even realize that that was what was happening. So I feel like I really never had a relationship with my mother. When I was in my 30s, she sat me down. She took my daughter and I out for martinis and told us about this whole secret other marriage that she had.
Oh my goodness. What?
Yeah. Like the secrets, the secrets in the family. And my father, God bless him, his trauma came from being in his 20s and being the one to find his own dad who had hung himself.
Oh my gosh.
And my dad was the one who had to cut him down.
Oh.
And there was never any support for that, that poor young man. Nobody ever recognized the symptoms of trauma. The, you know, mental health care just wasn't a thing in the suburbs in those days, and neither was divorce. So, like all parents, they did the best they could, but that wasn't very helpful. So then, you know, later I become an adult, and completely unplanned and unexpected, I became a single mom, which also would not have been an option for my mom. You know, she pretty much believed that she was trapped in this hideous marriage, and, you know, that there was nothing that anybody could do, and she would just go on punishing my dad for that for the rest of his life. But, you know, I have health care access occasionally when I'm rich. I occasionally have access to mental health care, and it's not easy to be a single mom, but it was 100% an option, and in fact a common thing by the time I got pregnant. And so I really spent a lot of effort trying to give my daughter the childhood that I never had. And I think that that's probably also very common with parents. And it sounds cliche, but a lot of times I decided what to do by doing the opposite of what my parents had done.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to have worked out all right because my daughter and I are very close and have a wonderful relationship. Okay. So I guess it was a good strategy, but, you know, I have to acknowledge that it was also reactionary and it was also part of working out my own trauma for myself. So it's all extremely complicated.
Mm-hmm.
It is so complicated. I know, you know, it's hard for me because my mother was loving and she was nurturing and she was a rebel in her own times. And I would say that my older sibling and I had a very different upbringing. I mean, we worked on a farm at a very young age. And so not only were we parentized, I guess if that's the word, but we also started working at a very, very young age. And we had a lot of responsibility. We didn't have a lot of rules, so long as we kept up with our responsibilities, which were many. Like, but my mother also, now I understand, was also a very, very traumatized person. And sometimes I think that she was also emotionally stunted because of when certain trauma happened to her. And it makes it hard as you get older to deal with that person. I mean, I had this wonderful relationship with my mother. Yes, there were things about my childhood that weren't good, but it wasn't until I moved out and was in my 20s and my 30s and living my own life that I started to see that what I had been raised in was actually kind of shitty. And, you know, she had mental health issues that were undiagnosed, and that my childhood, you know, what I thought was a normal and an amazing upbringing was actually really weird. So It is complicated now as a mother. One of my biggest fears is that my son will eventually turn his back on me when he's older. And that is, all sorts of situations bring that fear out. But I would say that because of his age now, he's actually survived and surpassed. Like by his age, there was like three very specific things that had happened in my life that were very influential and left marks. And he's made it to 8 and he still has his innocence, right? He mm-hmm. hasn't been extremely sick. He hasn't experienced drama and death and all these other things. And I remember the day that he turned 8, I was like, oh my God, like I did it differently. I was able to protect him from these things that no one could protect me from when I was smaller. So I hope one day that my mother and I can have some sort of relationship. It's actually only recently that I realized it's actually almost been a decade, and that was a little bit hard to be like, wow, like that much time has gone. When I decided, I am going to share this, when I decided to sever my relationship with my mother, at some point an article came to me that was extremely helpful. And I just want to put this out here for anyone who does have a really difficult relationship with any of their parents or relatives or family, because I think society puts this pressure on us to care for people who have actually been truly awful to us. So there's be a link to it in the description of the of this episode, but it's called The Debt. You can find it at slate.com under their family section. And the subtitle is, when terrible abusive parents come crawling back, what do their grown children owe them? And I would say, because I'm estranged from my mother, I think it's tough for me, like you said, Mary, when you hear people talk about really loving, beautiful, nurturing relationships, and you're like, oh, that's nice. in being estranged from my parent, I've had people say to me, oh, you need to fix that. You know, you're going to regret that decision one day. You know, and I finally turned to someone one day and I said, you know, did you have a really great relationship with your mom? And they're like, oh yeah, she was the best. But her mother was gone now, like she had passed. And I turned to my friend and I said, I'm so glad that that is the experience that you had with your mother while she was alive. And I said, but your experience is not my experience. And mm-hmm. you need to stop projecting that on me, because it's not fair. You're putting something on me that I don't understand. And even now, I actually find large family gatherings, like when I am in a relationship and I meet someone family, when I in spaces with really big families and really nurturing, loving mothers, it's a bit awkward and weird for me, because I don't always understand how to receive that kind of love. Because I'm, you know, and I don't know if that rings with any of you, but yeah. So before we tie up here, does anyone have anything else they wanted to share or say or follow up on anything anyone else said?
No. I do have one thing, but it's kind of just a brag. I mean, you can
yeah,
kind
do
of-
it. Let's.
Mary, you said that your mom told you she loved you moments before death, and that was the first time, potentially the first time ever.
As far as I can recall, yeah.
Oh, God. Oh, I just want to hug you right now. we have a practice in my family. The last words you say to anyone when you end a phone call are, I love you. And it's been that way for about 20 years. And I'm actually really glad about that, because, you know, I mean, it doesn't seem like a bad idea anyway. But then I can tell you with complete certainty, the last words I said to my dad, for example, were, I love you, before he passed away. So I actually while you were talking, I realized I forgot to end the phone call with mom that way. And I'm just thinking, shit, maybe I should phone her up and say, I love you. Bye-bye.
You should.
It's tomorrow where she is, right? She'll be awake.
Oh, God, you're right. It'll be the middle of the night. I'll be like, sorry, not important, not an emergency. Just, I love you. Bye-bye.
Well, I am really happy to hear that those of you that still have your mothers with you see your relationship improving. And I think one of the goals of any parent is to raise our children differently and better than our parents raised us, mm-hmm. regardless of how we were raised, right? So I want to thank all of you for sharing and being vulnerable. And I hope that the stories you've shared help other women who are struggling with understanding their relationships with their mothers and themselves and their own children, that you've helped them find a little bit of community and something to relate to. Thank you for being here. I'm so glad you're here.
I'm so glad you're here.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
If you're interested in joining the monthly Ode Bitch Boast Gathering, you can find event listings and tickets, which are free, on Eventbrite, as well as on the Town Ritual Facebook page. Search Town Rituals online. If you'd like to participate in a future podcast, please send me an email at townrituals@gmail.com, noting podcast in the subject line.
Cool. Love you all. Thank you.
Love you.
As Bye. Grandma said, love you and leave you.
Wonderful.
That's hilarious.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.